Hey everybody, welcome to the Nintendo Wirecast. I'm Hero TJ, and I'm here with my good buddy Amiibo Jason, and we are enduring 27 days with no Amiibo news. Is that right?
27 since the last Amiibo released, which was Simon or Richter Belmont and Dark Samus. So no new releases, no new confirmations. We have nothing on the horizon. It's sad. Very, very sad. And one day left in the week, and that's all we got. So,
although we do know that we've got some Amiibo news coming soon because Animal Crossing does support Amiibo, but they haven't detailed yet how that's going to break down.
That is true. That is very true. Which I'm not sure if I'm excited about or not, to be honest. I mean, I am excited about Animal Crossing. It's going to be a fun game, but the Amiibo support, I'm still, and again, we talked about this at length last week. I'm still not totally convinced it's not going to suck.
Animal Crossing news has been kind of slowly rolling out, and as people are starting to digest how they feel about certain things, it's created a little bit of a controversy, I think, in the gaming sphere that may turn off new players that I've heard described as anti-consumer, and also in the All wake right. of that lawsuit that Nintendo just won, shockingly, where I believe this is in Europe, where sure. if you pre-order the game, you cannot cancel it. And you're still on the hook for that, which is kind of shocking when you have received no physical goods.
Yeah.
But yet, somehow, I suppose I can see the argument if it was like the Smash Fighters Pass where there are exclusives tied up in it that Nintendo has no way to retrieve. Like, let's say you bought the Fighters Pass in advance of receiving any fighters, and then you get sure. your Rex and Pyra costume. You did legit get that Rex and Pyra costume, and they have no way to recover that from your system. So I guess a small argument could be made for that. But let's say you receive nothing.
I mean, to a certain degree, though, I mean, Animal Crossing is preloading right now.
Yeah.
Maybe their fear is that you can buy the game, get it preloaded, get the data, and at some point find a way to unencrypt that data, which isn't nuts. I mean, somebody has, and this is not Nintendo related, but I think it's fascinating nonetheless. Somebody was able to get into the back door of PlayStation Network, get a copy of the Final Fantasy VII demo that's been sitting there for the remake, that's been sitting there for a couple weeks, decrypt it, and play it. So now we have the Final Fantasy VII remake demo completely out in the wild. Square hasn't even confirmed this is real yet, and there's entire playthroughs of it already on YouTube, which is
wow.
amazing, by the way. I've only watched part of them to see if they were real, which they very much are. But I can see that as a valid concern from Nintendo's point if they're going to allow consumers to preload their content onto their system. But if maybe there's a way to determine, has this game been preloaded? Has any data moved back and forth whatsoever from one console to another? And if it hasn't, I could totally see a refund being justified. But in the other case, I guess I can see Nintendo having a case to a certain degree.
Well, here's where it affects me is if I pre-order a game, chances are I'm pretty dead set on getting that game. There could be myriad reasons why somebody may want to cancel one. Like maybe they thought they were going to purchase it for themselves and then they received yeah. it as a physical gift, or maybe you purchased, pre-ordered it, and then a special edition that you didn't anticipate comes out and you'd rather have that.
Sure.
But in my case, the only time where it happened for me was I pre-ordered Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Yeah.
And then that was prior to realizing that there was a bundle where I could also get the Fighter's Pass.
Yeah.
And so I would have just bought that instead of buying the two of them separately. But since there was no way to do it, I just figured it all works out to be the same at the end. So there's really yeah. no harm, no foul. Although if I could have canceled the main one and just bought the second one, I would have done that. So I don't know exactly what Nintendo's concern is there. You do raise some valid points because that does happen. That just happened with Pokemon where they send out a review copy and the guy starts leaking all this stuff.
Yeah.
And they're going after this guy aggressively. Did you see that press release when Nintendo actually dropped names?
Yeah, I did. And I went to... So the publication is F Nintendo, which is funny in its own way.
Yes, that's kind of ironic.
Was it Portuguese?
Don't quote me on that, but that sounds right.
It sounds right. We're going to be dead wrong. We could easily look it up, but we're not going to.
No.
We don't have time.
There's no fact-checking on this show.
But I looked at their statement about the entire thing, and it looks like Nintendo wrote it. It was so to the point of all the terrible things that they've done. My guess is Nintendo said, here's what you're going to say, otherwise we're going to sue you. Which makes sense, I guess, to a certain degree. So with Nintendo Wire, we get early access to many, many games. In fact, most games we do. And there is a lot of red tape behind that agreement. With Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, when that came out, we went to New York for an event, and we signed an ironclad NDA on that. And I hope can I even say that I signed an NDA? I'm sure I can.
Of course.
Sure, I think at that point. Yeah. But, I mean, we are lucky enough to get early access to all this stuff, and I think once this stuff, like, it starts leaking out, it just gets rid of the allure of so much of it. So, I mean, there has to be penalties for this kind of thing, for sure. And I think Nintendo name-dropping the publication is a good indication of what they're going to do going forward. I don't think they want a repeat of this, and this is kind of a, we're going to make an example of F Nintendo by effing F Nintendo.
Yeah, which they are Portuguese, by the way. I just did confirm.
All right.
That.
Hey, look at us. Fact
checking.
This is
going to have, it's going to have some negative ramifications on the reviewing aspect of the business all around, I think, because now they're going to need to vet people a lot more conscientiously, which is ultimately going to result in fewer review copies. Whether or not review copies of Pokemon inspire people to buy it, I can't say for sure. I definitely listen to the reviews, but they very seldom influence me buying something. You know what? Maybe scratch that. Maybe they didn't. It didn't influence me much when I was younger. But
sure,
if anywhere in a review somebody uses the term janky controls, I am not buying it because I just don't have time for that in my life. I cannot handle. If anyone perceived the controls as janky, then I'm not going to be able to deal with that.
And I think we're getting to a point with reviews anyway where reviews are shifting away from publications to having all the power, to influencers having all the power. And it's just a trend I've noticed lately where big companies, Nintendo included, have flown out influencers to certain events to go from there. I don't think at this point they would care what Nintendo Wire thinks about something in comparison to what a PewDiePie is a terrible example. He's the first person that always comes to mind. But one of these countless like kid YouTubers who play video games, I mean, they're the ones that have these legions of fans hanging on their every word. But yeah, I think the review process is just different to begin with. Even from when I started, it's just a very different world at this point.
Yeah, we're at a point now where physical media is so limiting, where in the digital age, there's no such thing as supply and demand. Every single person can own the game at the same time, for the most part, provided you have some sort of internet access. And sending out physical copies for review is almost more dangerous. Like people find physical copies, whereas digital ones are usually locked to your console. I don't know. But
I just have a question. I mean, before we even go any further, because I know there's another topic on this too, but you just kind of inspired something. What is the purpose anyway? For, unless there's a pre-order bonus, why would anybody pre-order a digital item?
I think you've really outlined the only logical reason, which is to pre-install it.
In many cases, you can't. Like, I can't imagine a situation where I'm like, I want to give Nintendo or whatever third-party company 60 of my dollars a month in advance for no good reason. Like, when I pre-ordered physical games, I did it because I was afraid when I went to the store it would be sold out.
Correct.
And that's not something I'd ever have to worry about with a digital game. And I guess I could imagine if you're a super fan, you just want to be done with it. But at the same point, too, exactly what you said with Smash, because you're a Smash super fan, you wanted something different down the line. So I don't see a point in pre-ordering digital content unless, I know Nintendo gives like gold coins out, extra gold coins, which I think generally equals to like a buck or two off your next purchase.
Sure.
But by and large, like I have not pre-ordered Animal Crossing in any capacity, and not physical, not digital, because I'm freaked out that during the next Nintendo Direct, they're going to announce some sort of special edition, even though I think they would have done that by now. But you never know. I mean, they could say, hey, we're dropping this bundle that comes with this exclusive Isabelle amiibo. And I'd be like, I want that.
Well, I could tell you that one of the of my incentives for doing it in advance is that I purchased vouchers.
And oh, yeah. You know, I forgot about those.
And I wanted to be certain, for those of you guys who don't know, if you subscribe to Nintendo Online, there was a while where you could pay, I think it was $99, to get two vouchers that are good for pretty much any first-party Nintendo game. So you could rip yourself off and spend it on a $40 game if you're not too savvy, I think. Or you could buy a $50 game. But I bought four of them, and I've kind of been just partitioning them out based on the $60 releases.
Is there a limit on when you can? Have to use them.
They do expire, but you have a long time. But yet, something in the back of my head is constantly kind of urging me: don't forget you have that voucher because you want to make sure that you spend that before they go under. And I'm not sure how close I was. I remember doing the math after Animal Crossing was first delayed and being like, okay, yeah, I should still be good to get that. Yeah. So I didn't have any urgent need to pre-order, but for me, it was very satisfying to be able to spend that last voucher and be like, okay, that deal is done. That's set. Yeah. I don't have to worry about that anymore. The game is pre-installed on my system. So I was positive I was going to buy it, and I was positive I wasn't going to cancel it, and they can't do anything to entice me with a physical thing because I haven't had a physical game. Well, okay, I'm going to take that back. I bought Ring Fit physically because that's the only way it's available, but other than Ring Fit, I haven't had a physical game since Nintendo Land on the Wii U, so my purely digital Switch, I want it to stay that way because smartphones have kind of taught me that I really enjoy having everything there all the time and I don't like to switch cartridges.
So let me ask you this. Last night, I rented a very interesting documentary called Not for Resale. And it is about the decline of physical video game merchandise. So specifically video games. It was a documentary about retro games, about how the digital marketplace has kind of changed the way people buy games and sell games. And everybody seems very, very mixed on having something tangible, something you can hold in your hand, put on a shelf, and having the convenience of something digital.
Yeah.
So it made me think quite a bit. Like, I have quite an expansive digital Switch library. But are you ever concerned, especially with the fact that we've seen it in the past with PSN? I can't remember what games they were, but certain games at certain points get delisted from the PlayStation Network. Like, it was third-party games where for some reason they lost the right to be able to host them on PSN. So you have to download them by a certain point or else you can never download them again. The same thing happened on Xbox Live. Does that make you concerned at any point that your Switch could break or die? And 10 years down the line, you log back into your account and a dozen or more or less, I guess, games that you purchased are no longer available for you to download.
I do think that is the concern when it comes to digital games is that you do have no guarantees. So you are in some ways beholden to the company to recover something if it is lost. However, it's not one of my concerns because even in the example that you set up, if like 10 years from now I want to go back and play something that I downloaded onto my Wii U and I have no way of recovering it, I just don't see the likelihood that I'm going to do that, because as the gaming industry is continuing to grow and expand and the audience is growing, more and more games are constantly coming out, and my backlog for games on the Switch is so big that I don't see the likelihood in me ever really needing to do that. So a lot of those games that I still have that are physical that I purchased for the regular Nintendo or the Super Nintendo, some of them I have framed. Like those gold Zelda cartridges that I bought when I was a kid, they're framed on my wall. I can't play it. I'm not going to go play that. And why would I anyway? There are better versions, I think, that have been emulated since that I could play on Nintendo
There's something special about putting in an original cartridge and playing it that way. In my bedroom right now, I have an NES top loader with a copy of Ninja Turtles in there that I play pretty frequently.
That's cool. Is it that Ninja Turtles game that's almost unplayable, or is it the...
Yeah, I mean, it is that one. It's the first one that came out.
Yeah, I remember.
And it was made by it was technically Konami that made it. But Nintendo back in the day had some rule where you can only publish like 5 games a year. So most of the big publishers came out with just fake studios that they could publish more with. And that's what Konami did in that instance. And I can't remember the name of it, but it was the same company that published Metal Gear on the NES. I just wish I could remember the stupid name. I'm going to look it up at some point.
I played that game a lot. Screw that water level. No, Turtles.
Oh, no, Ninja Turtles? With those, that pink seaweed that shocks you.
Yeah, and the bombs that blow up on you. I was able to beat it, but man, the amount of hours. I would have dropped that game like a bad habit if that came out like today. Yeah.
I'm really into physical merchandise.
I get that.
I mean, there's something about having original hardware. Even though I know at some point all of the carts on my N64 shelf are going to at least get to a point where they might be unplayable. I mean, I think they call it bit rot. Is that the term?
I've never heard that before.
So bit rot is kind of like this hysteria thing that all old microchips at some point deteriorate to a point where they're never going to work again. But even if I never get to play these, I mean, I just like owning them. I like knowing that if I want to take one of these off the shelf, I can. I don't have to worry about emulation bugs. I don't have to worry about if it's available digitally. Nintendo, I think, is probably the worst offender with that because they just don't like releasing their stuff conveniently digitally, at least their back catalogs.
Right. Although I do have to admit that how it affects me personally, they have been pretty good about it, because the NES Classic was a great little bundle that allowed me to revisit a ton of Nintendo games that some I did own physically and some I had never gotten around to playing, but they were all conveniently available in one spot, which is super cool. And then they did it again with their follow-up, the SNES Classic. And then you have Nintendo Online, which... For all the criticism that Nintendo gets for online, I've certainly levied my fair share against them too, and I'm probably going to criticize them a little bit later in this episode as we dig into Animal Crossing. But where the NES games and Super Nintendo games, it's an ever-expanding catalog, and it's pretty convenient to access. And you get in there and you just play it for a little bit of time. They even give you some expanded abilities to kind of support you through some of the more challenging sections of those older games. And for me, that's now the preferred way to play.
Go ahead. Sorry.
If I'm gonna try to play some of those games that really just murdered me as a child, it's satisfying to me to be able to create a save state right before the most difficult things, so that I could just kind of keep throwing myself against it and learn how to do it and get good at it in a much shorter span of time, because I could revisit it so many more times in that like Mike Tyson's a great example. I as a kid was never able to beat Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And so you need to be able to survive. He knocks you out with one punch. So this is a good place for me to train, to actually learn what his moves are. So I could kind of memorize what his patterns were, and it gives me a fighting chance. Now, I'm not under the delusion that if I beat him manipulating save states, that it somehow means I can beat Mike Tyson. But it is a way for me to be able to train and to see what's up ahead
and even having do it it's more just, and more. It's fun too. So it's not so like fun. You have to say, like, oh, I didn't really beat it. Like, I know there's been controversy around this, too. I can't remember who said it, but somebody said something similar to, like, if you use save states, you're not beating the game. If you're having fun, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I don't think that beating the game is always the goal. I brought this up, I think, before, where my oldest daughter, well, my only daughter, but my oldest kid. Ooh, I'm hearing me through your...
Hang on, I'm going to turn it down just a little bit. Tell me if you still hear you through this.
This is TJ. Oh, no, okay, I don't hear it. We're good.
Okay.
All right, so one of the first games that my daughter really got into was Yoshi's Woolly World, and we played that a lot cooperatively. My agenda was to try to progress to the right, which is what you're always trying to do in the game.
Yeah.
And she saw these two little mice that kept coming out of these pipes on either side of the screen and stealing her yarn balls and then running back into the hole. And she was laughing and just playing this game of tag with these mice, stealing her yarn balls back, and then the mice would come and take it again. 45 minutes go by, and I'm just kind of sitting there marveling at how she invented her own game within the game, and it's not how I would play it. And then fast forward to my son, the first game he really connected with was Mario Kart. The objective in Mario Kart is to get across the finish line first, or as close to the front of the pack as you can. His objective was to hit every single object that you could move on the entire course. So he'd always be dead last, but sure. For him, winning was knocking over every cone, was crashing into every cow. And what it actually did for him was make him a precision driver in a way that is beyond me. By trying to hit everything, he now, that he understands the game, has the ability to avoid anything. And it really just amazed me. And now my youngest son, who's starting to play the game, we've been playing a lot of Rayman Legends together.
Yeah.
His goal is to just kick and punch the living daylights out of everybody, which you can do in the game. So to say that you didn't legitimately beat it, I think really defeats the purpose of what games are about. Games
it's a game. I mean, it's designed to be fun. I mean, I get there's a completely different competitive side of everything. But for me, when I'm playing with my kid or Lauren or my friends, it's about having fun, and that's pretty much about it. I think it was Super Ghouls and Ghosts, or it was Ghosts and Goblins on the NES. I think it's on NES Online. I beat that game for the very first time, by using save states. And I would never in my life be able to beat that game without save states. That game is a grueling gauntlet. But it was fun. It was like a 45-minute play session. I cheated my way through it, and I made it, and I felt good. It was fun, and I enjoyed the experience. And it was something I would never do before. And I'll never attempt to do it without the save states, for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think that these games that don't have any, like, finite conclusion have a lot of appeal, like Animal Crossing, where there is no beating Animal Crossing. You could just go into this world and enjoy what it has to offer in the most relaxing way at your own pace, doing the things that you want to do. Where the things that my kids have been doing in the games that really are objective based. Animal Crossing, it's on you to find the fun within the game and what appeals to you. And that's why I enjoy talking to Animal Crossing fans, because everybody enjoys different aspects of the game. Like for me, I just want to go around, hit the villagers with nets and collect all the Nintendo themed items. Of course, I'm gonna fill up my museum with the fossils and catch fish and bugs, but I don't care about turnips. Oh man, I don't think I bought a single turnip in Animal Crossing ever.
The turnip market was fun though. I had a blast making money that way.
I've heard a lot of people say that.
Yeah, there's a whole subreddit like dedicated to turnip prices where you could find people online that had insanely high turnip prices. You could go to that town, you could cash them out in that town, and then leave the owner a tip. So I think there was a few points where turnip prices in my town were so astronomically high. I went to Reddit, I said, here's my town code, and I walked out with like 5 or 6 million bells and tips.
What?
It was fun stuff, and it's like you meet new people doing it that way too.
So now with Animal Crossing, people have been a little mixed on this the save state issue. I had a very brief conversation with Nintendo Wire's own Daniel on Twitter, where he was expressing discontent about the fact that you couldn't transfer your island from one Switch to another.
Yeah, which that sucks.
I thought, well, that's impossible because I understand them not wanting you to transfer your save data,
yeah.
But not being able to transfer like your whole Switch. Like if I wanted to migrate my Switch Pro, not just my profile, if I want to migrate everything from my Switch to a new Switch, like let's say hypothetically, Nintendo comes up with this beautiful gold Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild 2 Special Edition Switch. That's going to be the Switch I want to play on. And I'm going to want to move everything off of my current bland original run-of-the-mill Switch onto my new super awesome gold one. And of course, I would want my Animal Crossing Town to go with. But
for sure.
You're not able to do that.
So you're not able to do that to a degree. So Nintendo confirmed that if there was a lost or stolen Switch, that there might be an option. But it's not convenient in any way. But at the same point, it makes it evident that Nintendo can do this. There's nothing restricting them from doing this. My thought process is they must be concerned about duplicating items, which was a major issue in New Leaf.
Yes.
But for the most part, it didn't affect Nintendo in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
I mean, it was just, if you wanted to duplicate items, you could, and you could cheat the system and get away with having unlimited currency. But part of me wonders if there's something in New Horizons that is either going to be monetized, where there's going to be microtransactions, and they're absolutely, like, very concerned that people are going to find a way to cheat that system and lose money.
I'm very concerned that you're right about that.
Or there could be something else where they're just concerned about the integrity of the game itself. I think that's the only two logical reasons that Nintendo would restrict you. But I'm in the same boat as you because that hypothetical situation with your golden Switch is something I do about twice a year. So with the 3DS, my 3DS collection right now, I think there's about 13 in my 3DS collection. I was upgrading my 3DS at least once a year. So I would be moving from the 3DS to the 3DS XL, to the new 3DS XL, to the Majora's Mask version, to the new 2DS XL. Like, I think my main system right now is the Zelda new 2DS XL.
Yeah.
And that is my sixth main system since it first came out. I started with the blue one, I moved to the Zelda one, then I moved to the XL, then I moved to the 3DS XL, or the new 3DS XL, and then I moved to the 2DS XL. So, I mean, I do this frequently, and I've done it already twice with the Switch. So I went from, actually three times, I went from the original to the Pokemon Let's Go, that had the cool Pikachu and Eevee design on the back, to my main unit right now is the Switch Lite. And I just bought the, the Dragon Quest one that you can see right behind me. That's sitting right there. That at this point now I have to decide, do I want to put my Animal Crossing Town on this system or my Switch Lite? Because whatever I decide to do, it's going to be there forever.
Yeah, I think that's why it was really smart to launch the Switch Lite alongside Pokemon and not Animal Crossing, because in many ways, this undermines, in all ways, the ability to switch. I remember that people were saying, hey, how can you have a Switch that doesn't switch?
Yeah.
And I kind of semi-defended them in that it still did allow you to switch. You just had to utilize the save states. So you could take the portable one with you and then still play that same profile on your dedicated console.
Yeah, just cloud saves, which were great.
But now, without the ability to use cloud saves, you can't do that. And I understand them wanting to prevent exploitation, but as an OG Animal Crossing player, I've played every single game that's come out. Animal Crossing has almost been perfectly synced with my life. I have enjoyed the exploits just as much as every other part of the game. I am a notorious time traveler because I want to be able to play the game on my terms. If the only time I can play it is 2 a.m. because that's when I got off work, I want to be able to be during the day on my Animal Crossing so that I can do the things in that town that you could do during the day. I appreciate that it's in real time. I appreciate that it's a real calendar. But maybe I'm not available to be able to be there for a special fishing tournament, but I still want to do that fishing tournament when I have the chance to do it. I'm not going to wait around.
Yeah.
So I remember in the original one, you could link it with your, was it the Game Boy Advance? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could have the special Go to the little island. I became, I loved the progression of my career in that game. First, I was just a humble orchard farmer with fruits from all manner of different towns. I had somehow collected every kind of fruit, and I think I did that by just restarting towns and getting fruit from all those different ones, switching with my brother who had it too. And then eventually we got all the fruits. And by the end of it, I was a pirate. I would just take bags of bells out to that island and plant them on the 3DS version. And because of some exploit where if you unplugged it or delinked it, I'm not exactly sure how it went down because this is 20 years ago? I don't know. But what it did was essentially duplicate these bells. So I would get 300,000 bells per time. Or no, it's 30,000, I think, was the biggest bag you can make. And you'd get three of them per tree. So I was becoming a millionaire as a pirate. A billionaire. And that was pretty awesome to me. And then I also...
That's what we did with New Leaf.
Yeah, I did it too. The duplicating thing. Oh, man. And that was the way to go. All the
7-Eleven furniture, which was the rarest stuff in the game. It was Japanese exclusive. Oh, man. The Reddit communities for duping furniture were everywhere. And I had a blast with it. It made the game more fun.
I agree.
It really did.
It made the game more fun. So
I know Happily Candied's out there, just judging me right now that I'm cheating the system, but it's my own town. It's my own game.
Except that's another one of the issues. Now it's potentially not your own town.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go out and buy three different copies so that you, your daughter, and Happily Candied can all play your own town. That might be the way you have
on
to do
it. On three different systems we'd
have
to
On three different systems. For me,
Which
that's...
Which is, in its own way, insane.
Yeah. That's not happening for me. We got one Switch here. We're probably not going to buy another Switch until my kids get a little bit older. But even then, I don't really feel like rebuying games. So I'm not really sure how another Switch would fit into the way that we play. And I'm happy that we get to have one town.
Yeah.
But I can certainly see how the lack of profiles and the lack of the ability to be able to kind of partition your profile off from other players, just like every single other game on the Switch is. This is a tough sell, I think. When the entire time that the Switch has been out, you could have games like Breath of the Wild, which is a massive, sprawling adventure, and every single profile can have their own game. And they don't touch each other, and they don't interfere with each other, they don't interact with each other. But you don't have that option in Animal Crossing. What I do in my town is not my town. It's the Switch's town, and everyone who has a profile on that Switch can go and interact with that one town. I think it's kind of awesome, and I'm excited to experience it, but I realize that that's me personally, and I can see how that's going to be really problematic for some players who don't want
other people messing around. There has to be something we're missing. There has to be something that Nintendo has yet to announce that is going to make all of this make sense.
I wish that I thought that you were right about that. I totally think that they're just bulldoggedly forcing you to play it the way that they want you to play it, irregardless of how you feel about it.
It's just so bizarre. I mean, I get that with New Leaf. The save game was on the cart. So if I were to trade in my copy of New Leaf to a store, somebody could go in and ravage my town, whoever bought it. Which I think I did sell my copy in the idea of that kind of terrifies me to a certain degree. And the Switch doesn't work like that whatsoever. Everything is stored directly on the hardware itself. But it can't be a limitation, right? It has
no
to be
way.
A physical, this has to be a decision from Nintendo.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't know how to feel about it yet. I feel like we're going to get an Animal Crossing Direct in the next 2 weeks, tops. And I'm hoping it's going to make more sense at that point. And I think the backlash has been severe enough where Nintendo is going to shift their approach on it.
We have but seen I could be that totally happen. Wrong. Like, Nintendo's gone both ways with that, where there are times where people levy heavy criticisms against them, and it does actually impact change. Like, Mario... I'm forgetting the name of it. Mario Maker 2 is a good example where people were really upset that they couldn't play with their friends online. And Nintendo did reverse course on that and eventually add that implementation into the game. So is that possible here, where there's enough outcry, where they're concerned that it's going to affect the overall sales numbers of the game? I think sales numbers would be the only case in which that would be a factor.
Yeah.
But I really can't say. I think that they want you to play it a certain way, and they're going to make you play it a certain way. The thing that has me most concerned is not that, because while I realize that's an issue for some people, as I mentioned, it's not for me. What has me concerned is that when I downloaded the game, there was some fine print that said, this is a game that contains in-app purchases.
They did remove that.
They did remove
that? It's gone. Yeah.
Oh,
so maybe we wrote an article on people off this morning. Like me. If you want to check that out, NintendoWire.com, we actually wrote an article a few days back where we said that there was fine print. And then this morning, it was just mysteriously gone. But that being said, I think that there still could be some sort of microtransactions in this game. And the idea of microtransactions in an Animal Crossing game that's not Pocket Camp scares me to a certain degree.
Me too.
I always like the idea that everybody has to work... I guess you could cheat the system. But your town isn't going to be magically better unless you put the work into it. And if you can just buy your way to a perfect town, I think it's going to kind of destroy the entire experience. Even though that completely goes against what I said about playing your own way before. Well, but at the same time, too, I hope Nintendo doesn't put, like, amazing items behind a paywall.
Yes.
Like, Pocket Camp, that's its entire thing. Like, all the best items are completely luck-based. And the only way to do it is using leaf tickets, which you can either A, earn in the game slowly, or buy and get them in great numbers.
Yeah, so, that's...
Here's hoping that doesn't happen.
That's garbage to me. If you have to buy items that you can't otherwise get after you've already purchased this game, that's completely unacceptable. Although, if you could buy it as an alternative to earning it within the game... That's fine with me. Maybe people would rather drop a few bones than to have to win a fishing tournament. I'll go back to that example. Maybe you get some sort of special trophy or something. Or maybe you don't want to look for all the fossils and you're only missing one or two and it's worth it to you to drop 75 cents to get a missing fossil. Fine. I wouldn't do that. But I would hate to see that happen to this game. I would hate for Nintendo to turn into a real-life Tom Nook, who I know is the hero and savior of Animal Crossing, but... The guy does nickel and dime you, and if Nintendo nickel and dimed us on Animal Crossing, I think that would be the end of the franchise for me.
What about DLC?
Bring it on! I am like a hardcore DLC advocate.
What about Season Pass? Which I feel like Season Pass is borderlining on nickel and diming.
It depends, because Animal Crossing New Leaf did not receive ongoing expansions. The game came out, and then we had that one big amiibo overhaul. They added Welcome Amiibo. But if they're going to support the game over time, that's going to continue to evolve the experience, and I'm going to be able to continue to play the game in new ways, and it's going to keep me coming back, like, for example, Breath of the Wild and Smash Brothers did, where I absolutely... And another good example is Hyrule Warriors. All of those games... kept adding things to the game that expanded the game and gave me the opportunity to go back to a game that I already loved and to experience something new. So for me, I think that's spectacular. I wish, and I know that I'm probably in the minority here, that they could turn Zelda into a season pass game where they support it kind of like how they're supporting Smash Brothers. Where,
I mean, they did to a certain degree.
To a certain degree, but I want it to not be an unending world.
Yeah.
I want them to be able to kind of like... maybe World of Warcraft, They're constantly adding new campaigns. They're constantly adding new dungeons and enemies. And it becomes an ever-expanding world. And I would gladly pay a subscription fee, kind of like Super Mario Kart Gold Pass that they have for Tour. Now, while I think Gold Pass and Tour is kind of a joke, I did enjoy it for a month, a free month. And then I paid for it the next month. It was fun for 2 months. But they could definitely hook me into something like that with Zelda if, as I'm imagining it, we have something like the Champion's Ballad, which is a small little expansion to the game. It's a fun way to revisit it and to get deeper immersion with characters that we've already come to enjoy from the original version of the game. If they're going to keep adding those, I would keep buying those and keep playing those. I would probably rather it not be a season pass or some kind of subscription-based service. I would rather it be, hey, here's the next one. It's dropping. It's $30. Buy this new one. I would rather do that because then I know exactly what I'm getting. It's each thing's an individual purchase. I know that it takes time, energy, effort, manpower, money to be able to continue to support an ongoing, evolving ecosystem. And Animal Crossing is that, where it has no finish line. So since it is constantly going to be happening, if they're going to keep adding special events, and these are going to be like things that they have a staff assigned to that they're paying, they're going to have to come up with that money somehow. And that can't be just the price of admission.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly sure what the best way is. And Nintendo's been experimenting with different price payment structures on their mobile games, and some of them are big hits and some of them are big misses. And even the biggest hit is a big miss, like Fire Emblem. It's single-handedly earned more than the rest of their mobile apps combined. But for me, I've spent the least on that one of any of them because they've established how impossible it is for you to achieve your goals. You just have to drop so much money to get what you want.
In a which people are willing to do, but I think it's a very small minority of people.
But that small minority of people is making Nintendo some serious bank. So it's not surprising that we have a great game in the form of Mario Run that costs $10, totally fair price for that game, that dramatically underperforms. And then you have a game like Fire Emblem, which I enjoyed. I love Fire Emblem Heroes. It's the most fun I've ever had with Fire Emblem outside of Smash Brothers. But I didn't spend a dime because the game is so criminally unfair with the orbs. So I'm not going to spend money so that I could be disappointed by my drops. And I realized the same thing when I started playing Mario Kart Tour, where I can play this game for free and have fun, but there is no way this criminal pipe is going to get a single cent from me because it's just giving me garbage every single time. And the odds of getting what you want are so low so that it incentivizes people to keep paying for it. If that happens in Animal Crossing, which it already sort of did in Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, if they migrate that payment structure in any form into the big game, I think that's going to be a big disappointment.
I think Nintendo is going to be treading lightly with their heavy hitters. So Animal Crossing, Mario, Zelda, I feel like they're going to be incredibly cautious before making any kind of decision that would alienate their user base. I mean, I think Mario is a great example. I thought for sure we would have seen paid Mario DLC for Odyssey. Mario's Nintendo's biggest thing. And if they released anything, people would buy it. Luigi's Balloon World, in my opinion, would warrant a $5 DLC purchase. And Nintendo just gave it to us. The same thing with all those new hats. After the game came out, all of these brand new hats essentially got put into the game, and they just kind of sporadically released them for absolutely nothing. I think another company would charge $2-3 per hat. I mean, just to make an extra buck, but Nintendo did not do that. And with Zelda, the DLC they released was so good, and it was so, in my opinion, it was so cheap for what you got. I didn't hear a single person complain about the way Nintendo handled that DLC. So I feel like for the heavy hitters, like the biggest of the big for Nintendo, they're not going to go down that route where they piss people off. I could be wrong, though. I mean, the company has made some very interesting decisions over the past few years, but I feel like their track record, at least as of right now, has been pretty solid.
Yeah, I think if we measure them with their completed DLC, almost unilaterally, it's considered to be great. But I do remember there was a lot of dissension when they first announced the Zelda DLC, because they announced it before the game even came out, if I'm remembering correctly. And people were like, what? You're announcing the DLC for a game that we haven't even played yet? That's something you should just put in the game. I knew that I was in. I knew that for it didn't matter what it was. I was in. And most people who played the DLC really loved the DLC, but they were not happy with the idea that Nintendo was selling DLC for something that you didn't even know what it was. They're like, no, this first one, yeah, it's going to be some like new game modes, and you're going to get kind of a hard mode and Trial of the Sword, and for the next one, you're going to get some story stuff.
Yeah.
That it was so vague that a lot of people were not satisfied with the idea of paying in advance for this. Once it came out, you can assess the value. Like, is this worth $20? Like, for me, absolutely it is. I could see other people maybe not enjoying the game so much. If you didn't like the original game, you're not going to like the DLC. But if they go that way with Animal Crossing, it's a little bit harder to imagine how you could do something like what they did with Zelda. It's easier to imagine something like Smash, where they give you a whole bunch of new villagers. Like, suddenly now you can have 20 new villagers.
I could totally see them doing that. And I think you hit it right on the head as far as what they're going to do. They're going to release, and they're going to say something like, we have to develop all of these new characters, which is why they're not in the game right now, but you can get them later and you can pay for them. They could do it for Splatoon. They could do it for Zelda. They already did for Zelda to a certain degree with Welcome Amiibo. They could do it for all of their big franchises. They could bring Yoshi into Animal Crossing, even though I think that would be weird. Weird as hell.
If they started doing that nonsense, they would strip me bankrupt. I would be if they turned Animal Crossing into allowed me to kind of construct my island as Super Nintendo World.
Yeah.
Where if I could build Nintendo Land inside of Animal Crossing, I would do it. Like, that was my dedicated mission in New Leaf, where those stupid fortune cookies that you could only get with play coins.
Yeah.
I found myself putting my system on a fan, you know, a rotating fan, just so I could earn the max number of play coins every day, because I wanted to buy those fortune cookies so I can get the special unique Nintendo themed items like the flagpole or a Mario hat, all the different costume items, the Samus helmet. If I could do that in this upcoming game, I would pay money. Like, hey, now you get all these cool new Yoshi things that you could put in Yoshi World. Okay, all right, here, take my money.
It's a slippery slope for sure.
Because
we're both geeking out about the idea. But at the same time, too, it's kind of, where does it stop? Like, I think I'd be okay if they said, here's a 5-pack of brand new villagers from Nintendo games. I'd be fine with that. But if they're like, and also here's 150 new items that you can only get for your town if you spend this money.
Yeah, that would be garbage.
Because with New Leaf right now, or with New Leaf, they released new items as time went on. If I remember correctly, I know for like special events and stuff like that, they would just say, okay, this item is coming to the game, this item's coming to the game, and they would just do a software update and new items would come that way. And I'm sure Nintendo's going to do that to a certain degree. But I think there has to be a line in the sand with where I'm comfortable with this. And it has to be substantial enough where I feel like extra R&D time had to go into it. And it's not just like a reskin of an item or something like that. I don't know. I guess at the same time, too, it's just I feel like this game is too big for Nintendo not to monetize it besides the first, like, initial push.
Okay,
like, here's my $60. Give me the game. This is everything I'm going to get out of it. There's going to be more. I'm trying to decide what that's going
to
be.
Let me test something on you just to kind of see if this would appeal to you personally. Now, you probably remember back to the GameCube version where you could dig up Nintendo consoles and play a bunch of really cool old Nintendo games in Animal Crossing on a console. Well, you were legit playing the game.
I think I bought an e-reader just so I could buy the card packs and scan in extra games. I think that's how I got Balloon Fight.
I think
Balloon Fight was on an e-reader card that you had to scan in to Animal Crossing.
It may have been. It was also definitely dig-upable because I didn't have the e-reader card, and that was the first time I ever played Balloon Fight.
Okay, cool.
But let's say that they're like, okay, we've got this cool new Super Mario Brothers pack where you get the classic Super Mario Brothers with Super Mario Brothers 2, Super Mario Brothers 3, NES consoles that you can display in your house with custom costumes of Mario and Luigi and Princess Peach, and also a whole bunch of Super Mario themed items and furniture that you could put into your house. And if you try to play these consoles in your house, you can actually play the legit version of those games.
Yeah.
Could they sell that to you for $5?
Oh, they would. I mean, and I'd be complaining about it, and I'd still buy it.
It wouldn't make you happy. Like, I was happy to get a Nintendo $20 for the Zelda DLC. I was happy to pay for the Fighter's Pass.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't do it fast enough. So you would buy it, but you wouldn't be happy about it.
I'd buy it. I'd still be happy about it, but I'd still complain.
Okay.
Which is, I think, the nature of gamers right now anyway.
Sure.
I'm curious to see Happily Candied's thoughts on this. So I think once we start getting like a dedicated Animal Crossing Direct, we have to have Lauren on an episode.
Yeah.
To counterpoint some of this.
Absolutely.
I know she's probably in a completely different place than I am
when it comes to
monetization. Like I know that she spends money on the cookies much more frequently than I do in Pocket Camp. So she probably has a completely different idea of what's acceptable for New Horizons.
Yeah.
So I want to get her counterpoint because she's like the resident Animal Crossing freak. Like she plays New Leaf daily still.
Now we know that there's going to be some kind of Animal Crossing news breaking, but people have made it their mission to leak fake directs or come up with fake Nintendo Twitter accounts with really convincing fake direct announcements. I have to say, my number one annoyance as a gamer in this current state is how committed people are to trying to trick other people with fake leaks. I'm like at my wit's end with it. It drives me crazy that I can't just scroll through Twitter and see, hey, what did Nintendo announce today? What's in the news cycle today? And I have to scrutinize every single little splash to say, wait, are Cuphead spirits really coming to Smash, or is somebody just messing around? And I saw like at least five fake Nintendo Direct announcements every single day of January and February. Apparently, there's rumored to be a Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, I mean, we delayed this episode specifically because there was a rumor a Direct would happen this week, which isn't crazy to think that we would get a Direct right now.
It's not crazy to think that at any point there would be a Direct
that's true.
But what
is tomorrow?
Crazy,
it could be a Valentine's Day Direct. I'm calling it right now. There's, 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, a Direct Mini is going to shadow drop.
Because we know it's been a long time since we've had a general Direct. This year, we've already had two really big news drops. We had the first Pokemon DLC one, and then we had the Smash final character reveal. Two things, well, one thing we knew was coming, and then the other thing I think was a bit of a surprise. But Nintendo still has some Animal Crossing news that I think they're going to want to get out in advance of the game. So predicting that there's going to be some kind of Direct soon is like saying sometime it might rain in Seattle.
When is PAX? So Nintendo has a massive presence at PAX East. So from what I saw, there's going to be Animal Crossing at PAX East. PAX East is set for
March 6th through 8th in 2015.
Okay, February 27th through March 1st. So we are about 14 days away from PAX East, which means there will be a Nintendo Direct before then. There is no way they are going to bring Animal Crossing to PAX East in a playable form, which is what the main rumor is, but I don't know if I believe anything anymore. They're not going to bring it to PAX East in playable format without giving the general public an idea first.
Yeah, I think so.
In my opinion.
Nintendo likes to control the news cycle. They like to announce things on their own terms. When things are leaked in advance, they deny it, and they pretend that it never happened, and they just go about their normal business as usual, which is what I think they should do. You can't address every single leak and rumor, and now it's so rampant that what I really don't understand is what gratification do you get from creating a convincing leak, which is super easy to do. The average 12-year-old could do it now.
Yeah.
Like, what do you get out of that? Yeah, you tricked a bunch of people. Like, how is that? What do you get from it? It doesn't give you money. Doesn't give you any kind of, like, celebrity status or special access. All it does is just kind of troll people.
Yeah. People like that.
Was there ever one of those... Now, fake leaks and fake rumors is not anything new. That goes all the way back to the earliest days of gaming. I remember getting tricked by a few that made the rounds. Even EGM, which is a magazine that I used to subscribe to when I was younger that gave gaming tips, would publish fake like codes to do things in a game that forced you to do really tough things. I think one of them, I didn't try to do this, but I remember it, was you could unlock other versions of Bond in 007. And it was like a prank, an April Fool's prank or something like that. But the thing that got me was being able to get Yoshi in Mario 64.
Yeah.
Where if you did all of these really complex things, you could ride Yoshi around. And I remember just, you had to get 120 stars and you had to like get up onto the roof and there was Yoshi, and then you could ride him around. I did that. I worked super hard to get all those 120 stars, and I did every other little thing that I thought you had to do. Some of them were super tricky and nuanced, and you couldn't tell if you had done it correctly or not. And then when I didn't get Yoshi, I must have done this thing wrong. Of course, eventually, it was all revealed to be a big scam, and it really kind of aggravated me. I think that bitterness towards fake leaks and rumors about games that I experienced when I was young has kind of only expanded as I've gotten older, because I'm from a position of, what is the point? Why are you doing this? Why do you care to trick people like this? So I don't know.
Do you remember back in the day, there was a rumor that you could get the Triforce in Ocarina of Time?
Absolutely. And I tried.
There
was
screenshots of the Light Temple where you could see Link, like, right in front of the Triforce. Like, and this was before Photoshop was, like, a big thing.
Yeah.
And I was 100% convinced
that this
was real. And it was like, run around Hyrule Field 15 times and then do this. And it was nuts. It was that and then Mew being under the truck.
Oh, man, you are giving me PTSD, son. I did both of those things. I tried forever to get Mew with my brother under the dumb truck.
Yep.
And I tried forever to get the Triforce in Ocarina of Time. You're like doing rumors' greatest/worst hits.
It's great, though. I mean, nowadays it's like, yeah, you can be upset for about 5 minutes about like getting tricked by something on Twitter, but it's immediately debunked. Like if you look in the comments or if you look, I mean, you can verify it. Back in the day, you couldn't debunk this stuff. You couldn't go online to say, is Mew really under the truck? No, we've gone through every line of code in the game and there's no code for Mew under the truck. That doesn't happen in 1995. Like, you can't do that stuff.
That's true. So, although, it actually, you reminded me, just recently I was tricked about something where I did my predictions video for the next 6 Smash DLC characters.
Yeah.
And I had referenced a poll that was making the rounds where it kind of identified which characters were most popular in different regions, Japan, U.S., and Europe. And someone in the comments section said, I love how this guy references a debunked fake list. And I was like, I did? And he's like, oh yeah, everybody knew this was fake. I didn't. I had seen this list crop up for months.
Yeah.
And just sort of assumed its legitimacy because it had originally been circulated by reputable sources. And I must have just missed the memo when people determined that this was a fake list. Huh. So like that kind of thing drives me nuts. I can't stand that garbage.
Yeah. We live in a weird time. I guess it's not just a weird time. People just like making
they
the
like,
fool out
they
of
like
other
trolling.
People.
All right, before we head out of here, do you have time for a Challenge the Champion Amiibo?
Oh, God, yeah.
Quiz
I totally forgot
question.
We were doing this. Yeah, let's do this.
All right.
You got a, you got one?
I got one for you.
All right, let's do it.
All right. What is the total number of Pokemon Amiibo?
Okay. Am I allowed to look?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay, I'm just going to name them.
Like, you can't run
around
your
look.
Room.
I'm not going to look.
Yeah,
but
talk
I'm going to name
it.
Them. Okay?
Talk through it.
The very first one was Smash Pikachu. That's one. The second one, I believe, was Charizard, which was two. Greninja. Lucario. Mewtwo. I think that was it for the first round of Amiibo. Then we had Pichu, Ivysaur, Squirtle, Incineroar, which brings it up to nine. We have Detective Pikachu, which is the big guy. And now I am going to look up, just in case. Does Pokemon Trainer count?
Absolutely.
So that's 11. I think I forgot Jigglypuff, which is 12.
Doing pretty good here.
I think that's it. No. Shadow Mewtwo card. Bringing it to 13. I think it's 13.
Now, unless I made a mistake counting ahead of time, you are exactly correct, oh noble royal king of Amiibo.
I nearly forgot Shadow Mewtwo.
I thought that that might be the sticky one because people oftentimes forget the card. It had no functionality outside of the Pokken tournament.
Such a lame thing. It really
was.
So
lame. It should have at least been able to be a Mewtwo in Smash Brothers.
I thought for sure that that card was a sign of things to come.
Me too.
I thought, I'm like, this is the start of Amiibo Pokemon cards, and it's going to just print money for Nintendo.
That would have been, like, if Animal Crossing cards were a thing, Pokemon Amiibo cards would have just been next level. They could have just gotten pretty much out of the gaming industry and just made Pokemon Amiibo cards.
That would have been good stuff. You never know, though.
Congratulations.
We got a direct coming up in the next...
Good job.
3 weeks, maybe?
Yes, I have it on good authority that in a few minutes there's going to be a Nintendo Direct.
Very nice.
According to
TJ,
Twitter.
I'm going to make sure on the next episode that if there is a direct and we have any new Animal Crossing news, that Happily Candied at least makes a cameo.
Yes.
We need to pick her brain on this stuff.
Totally. But I want to hear the opinion of somebody who views the game much differently than me. She's like, to Animal Crossing, what Zelda is to me. So I'm gonna like her perspective.
We'll make it happen. TJ, where can the good folks at home find you?
Check out my content on YouTube on the Nintendo Wire channel. I hope to have another Animal Crossing themed custom conquest sometime in advance of the game releasing. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at Custom Conquest.
All right. And for me, you can find me at my personal Twitter account at Amiibo Jason. I have taken a liking lately to modifying Game Boys. I have done another one. And I'm going to be doing, I think, another one this weekend, too. So if you're into modifying classic consoles, you can find my exploits over at Amiibo Jason. Otherwise, on Twitter, you can find me at NinWire and at Amiibo News. And, of course, on NintendoWire.com. I think that's it for today. I'm hoping that the next podcast we have, we actually have something substantial to talk about regarding a Nintendo Direct or anything new Nintendo. But until then, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.